Midwest Radio Mystery Theater presents... Abraham Lincoln was 40 years old. He gave up politics and returned to being a lawyer. In those days, you rode the circuit of 15 counties. Courtrooms were often the town tavern, and the cases, anything short of murder, generally. Our story today is a murder case, Lincoln's very first, acting as defense attorney for the accused. And although we're dramatizing a fictional version, the bare bones of this murder trial and the way Lincoln handled it are true and actually happened.
Lily, I know a lawyer who might defend Tom.
In a murder case, Sheriff? Without asking a lot of money?
That's his reputation. His name is Lincoln. He's a nice man. He's fair.
You say he's good.
He's known to take on lost causes and win them.
How do you spell his name?
L-I-N-C-O-L-N. Abe Lincoln.
Our drama, The Abraham Lincoln Murder Trial, was adapted from a story by Edward Eggleston and dramatized especially for the Mystery Theater by James Agate Jr. It stars Patricia Elliott and Lloyd Batista. I shall return shortly with Act One. In Illinois, 130 years ago, in a small town. I guess most of them were small in the 1850s. This town is smack dab in the middle of the state. No railroad, not yet. Dusty streets. Most people went anywhere by horseback. The lucky ones by buggy, and most everybody at one time or another stopped in to buy something from Ted Wooden and Billy Snyder in their general store. On this hot July night, there's a card game going on in the back of the store. And not unlike card games today, there are winners and there are bound to be losers.
George, you better deal me out. I'm out of the game.
Don't tell me, Tom, you're through for the night.
Dave, all I've got left on me is my underwear. That's not worth much.
Well, since there's only two of us left, I guess I might as well pack it in for the night, too.
Say, Dave, you won an awful lot off me tonight.
Yeah, I guess I did. Maybe tomorrow will be your night.
It hasn't been my night in a long time.
George, you been keeping track?
I've been trying to.
What did I win off old Tom tonight?
His hat, and his coat, and his boots, his handkerchief, and his knife, and saddle.
Ain't you forgetting something else, George?
You also won $13 off me.
That's right. Well, I'll see you tomorrow or the next day or whenever you feel like losing some more, Tom. Or you might win. Who knows?
Tell you what I do know, Dave.
What's that?
That I got a real problem.
What's that?
How am I going to get home without my boots? Without getting arrested for walking the street practically in the buff?
Oh, that is a problem. But I won those boots off you fair and square. You can't deny that.
You just had better cards than I did.
Well, I'll help you out, Tom. David, how about, with $25 suit you? Payment in full for the lot.
You mean you buy Tom's boots back for him?
$25 for the boots and saddle, the hat, coat, knife, and handkerchief. The whole kit and caboodle.
You're asking me to take $12 for all of them things? You already owes me $13. 12 and 13 makes 25.
Oh, come on, Dave. This is a friendly game. I always treated you nice and fair, haven't I?
Yeah.
Well, we don't cut no throats in Illinois.
$35.
30.
All right. 30.
George, that's real decent of you. I'll see you get that back as soon as I can.
Well, I'm in no hurry. As long as you can pay me back in, say a month. It's Martha's birthday on the 13th of August. I was thinking of getting her bonnet and dress.
You have it back, George. And your wife will have a birthday present. That's a promise.
Hello,
late. You said you'd be here at the fairgrounds at 8 or 9 o'clock. That dress store closed at 5.
George, I haven't got the $30. But I will soon, I promise. Can you give me another week?
Another week?
I promise. Honest, I do.
No, you promised last time and the time before that.
I did have the money. I had the money yesterday, darn it.
What do you mean, you had the money?
Oh, I played Dave again. And I lost again.
I don't believe that. I know Dave. He swore to me he wouldn't have one more hand with you till you paid up.
Maybe so, but he sure took my 30 yesterday.
I ain't never had no occasion to call anyone a liar, but I've known Dave a long time.
Now, hold on, George. Suppose I go find Dave for you and have him tell you himself. I know he's here at the fairgrounds because I've seen him. You wait right here. I'll go find him. I may not have the 30 I owe you right now, but I don't aim to let you go on thinking I'm a liar.
Well, I'm afraid that's what you are, Tom. A liar and a Welsh.
Hey! Somebody be shot!
Tom Grayson. Hey, Tom, come back here.
You sure that was Tom running away like that?
I'd know Tom anywhere.
I saw him fire a pistol just now. The man was standing right here. Look there. Over there on the ground. It's George. George Lockwood.
Oh, he's dead.
We better get the police. Why would Tom shoot him? I don't understand it.
You saw him do it, Dave.
Couldn't have been no one else. I wasn't any further away than you could throw a stone. Better get the sheriff. Sheriff, I can tell you, I saw him do it with my own eyes.
Not so fast, Dave. I'm trying to write all this down.
And Bill here, he was standing over by the fairground entrance gate. He saw it was Tom running away.
Is that a fact, Bill? You saw the man running away from Tom Grayson?
I sure did, Sheriff.
Don't make much sense to me. George is the right guy. So why in the name of anything, if it was Tom, why would he shoot George? Either you two know whether there was a grudge or something?
Not really, no. I mean, unless,
Unless what?
I guess you could sort of say it was my fault, Sheriff. In a way.
Dave, first you swear you saw Tom Grayson shoot George dead this evening. And now what's all this about maybe it being your fault? Now hold on before you answer me. Jesse? Hey, Jesse. Come in here.
Where are you, Sam?
In my office, the sheriff's office. Where else would I be?
Here I am, Sam. What is it?
Jesse, I want you to start looking for Tom Grayson and bring him here to this office for questioning.
I already sent out a search party.
When was that?
When Dave and Bill walked in here and told you about the shooting.
All right, Jesse. You just keep at it.
Do my best, Sam.
Dave, would you mind explaining how it was on account of you that Tom killed George?
Well, I think it might have been. Tom keeps playing poker and losing, and I keep winning. You see, George bailed him out when I'd win money from him. I guess he figured George wouldn't keep after him to pay it back if he was dead.
Oh, sorry I asked you. That reason don't make no sense at all. Only thing that does make sense is the doctor's pretty sure George was killed by a bullet from a pinfire revolver. That's a pretty sure conclusion. And that for some reason, Tom was hot-tailing it out of the fairgrounds right after George was shot. That much we do know.
And we do know I saw him shoot George with my own eyes. Why, I ain't sure.
Well, whatever the reason, first we get him, and then we'll find out.
Tom, you have to go back and face George. You can't run away from an obligation.
I ran because he took a pot shot at me. Billy, I can't face a man who acts like he's going to kill you.
You should have explained to George that you are not a Welsher. You might be a stupid fool, but you pay back what you owe.
I wasn't hanging around to explain anything after I heard his gun go off.
You gambled your money away. And now you're gambling by running away. You go find George. Tell him we can give him $5 a week until the debt's paid off, and I hope this will teach you a lesson.
Oh, it's George. He's come after me. Hide me, Lily. You've got to.
I'll do no such thing. If you won't face George, I will. George wouldn't shoot you. Don't be silly. Would you, George? Oh, it's not George, Tom. It's Jesse. Well, come here, Jess. Hi, Sheriff Sam.
Tom here?
He sure is. Tom, come downstairs. We got a visitor from the sheriff's office. You're working late, aren't you, Jesse? Or is this just a social call?
Hi, Jesse. I thought you were someone else.
Who'd you think I was, Tom?
Oh, it's so stupid, grown men acting like boys. Tom owes George some money. And he thought George was threatening him with a gun. I can't believe it, really.
Is that what you thought, Tom? Is that why you did it?
Did what?
Tom, where's your gun?
Well, it's hanging on the hook there. I took it off when I came in. Why?
Mind if I take a look? It's my official duty.
Help yourself.
Official? What is all this, Jesse?
Got it. 12-millimeter pin fire pistol. I'll take charge of this, if you don't mind.
If you don't mind, Jesse. What's this all about?
I see, one bullet's been fired.
For sure. Shot a rabbit this morning.
Lily, I'm sorry, but I have to take Tom into custody.
What for? Shooting a rabbit?
Not a rabbit. For shooting George Lockwood. And killing him.
Lily's here to see you. Hey, you can stand outside his cell door as long as you like, Lily.
Sheriff, you can't keep Tom locked up for something he didn't do.
I don't understand any of it. I didn't shoot George, and no one believes me.
I'll leave you both alone, Tom. I'm sorry, honest I am, but your story is hard to believe. One bullet out of your gun, and it looks like the same kind of bullet and gun that killed George.
Everybody in Illinois carries a pinfire revolver. So did George.
Everybody isn't seen firing one and then running away.
Is that what happened? Is that the charge?
Sheriff, won't you believe me? I admitted I ran away because I thought it was George shooting at me.
Now, why would he do that?
I don't know. I wasn't waiting to find out.
Sam, why don't you take Tom's word for this?
Because a witness saw the whole thing.
Who? Who saw what?
Lily, you know it all in good time. Tom will have to appear before a judge, and then the state will make its case. Think it over, Tom. Maybe add just cause. The truth is the best.
Some truth. No one wants to hear that. I ran because I heard a shot, and oh, what's the use? I've said it 100 times. No one cares about my side of the story.
Sam, who can we get to take on Tom's side of it?
A lawyer.
How do I get one?
Well, if you don't get one, just stay right here in jail.
Well, then it's up to me. Well, what do I do?
Well, we're part of what's called the 8th Judicial Circuit in this part of Illinois. It's about 15 counties, I think, and there are lawyers who go from town to town defending people. That's called riding the circuit. We don't have enough cases for a full-time lawyer to make a living at it in this town.
But don't they want money to take on the case?
Yeah, most of them do. That's how they eat.
But we don't have any money. If we did, I wouldn't be here accused of killing someone I didn't kill.
In about a month, the circuit court in our town will be open. Tom's case will come up, a jury will be selected, and a judge will hear both arguments.
I need me a good arguer.
I know a good one. And even without money, he just might take Tom on.
Take on a murder case without asking a lot of money?
That's his reputation. His name is Lincoln. He's a nice man. He's fair.
Who?
Abe Lincoln. You get him to defend your husband, Miss Grayson. And if Tom's innocent, he's got a good chance.
But I am innocent.
Yeah, sure.
I'll find this lawyer. You say he's good.
He's known to take on lost causes and win them.
Ida Tarbell, the great Lincoln biographer, who in 1895 documented this case, tells us no lawyer on the circuit was more unassuming than was Mr. Lincoln.
He treated everyone with simplicity and kindness. He had more than a knowledge of the law. He knew right and justice and how to apply them to everyday life. Few lawyers ever had the influence with a jury Mr. Lincoln had. I shall be back shortly with Act Two. We are in Illinois in the 1850s. Abraham Lincoln, not yet president, is a practicing country lawyer, riding horseback from county to county, case to case. Tom Grayson, accused of the murder of George Lockwood, needs an attorney. Tom's wife, Lily, traveling by buckboard, finds Lincoln, trying a case in Bloomington.
Sir, is the trial almost over?
I don't know, ma'am.
I was told Mr. Lincoln is one of the lawyers.
That he is. You can go into the courtroom if you like. Just sit yourself quiet at the back.
Which is exactly what Lily Grayson did. The case being tried was that of a man who provoked a fight and then got beaten up by the man he attacked. To get even, the first man had the defendant brought into court on a charge of assault and battery. Lincoln was the attorney for the defendant. From her seat at the back, this is what Lily heard.
Your Honor, may I speak on behalf of the defendant?
Mr. Lincoln, proceed.
My client is in the fix of a man who was going along the highway with a pitchfork on his shoulder. Well, now, the man was attacked by a fierce dog belonging to a farmer. In defending himself with the pitchfork, the prongs of the fork killed the fierce dog. Well, the farmer ran out and said, "What made you kill my dog?" "What made him try to bite me?" said the man. "But why didn't you go at him with the other end of the pitchfork?" said the farmer. "Well, why didn't he come after me with his other end?"
Tom, I tell you, Mr. Lincoln had the whole courtroom laughing its head off, and they understood right away what he was getting at, that the other fella had brought on the fight, and Mr. Lincoln won the case.
Yeah, well, Lily, that's all very funny, but is he going to take my case?
He said, yes, he would.
Oh, thank heavens.
I think he's the right lawyer for us. I've heard a lot of good about him and how he handles a witness.
That's very important in my case.
Why?
Because Dave Sovine has sworn out an affidavit. He definitely saw me shoot George. He's the state's most important witness.
But isn't it just your word against his?
I asked the sheriff that. He said, "Why would Dave lie? And why did you run away?" he said to me.
Well, Mr. Lincoln told me to tell you, from now on, until he gets here, you don't say anything to anybody. Do you think the sheriff is on your side?
I do, Lily. I think he sort of is now. He wasn't in the beginning. I think now he's hoping it was all an accident. And Mr. Lincoln can prove it wasn't really my fault.
Mr. Prosecuting Attorney? Do you have any more witnesses?
Yes, Your Honor. Call David Sovine.
Call David Sovine!
And?
Yes, Lily.
I never liked that David Sovine. Is he going to get up and tell his lies?
He'll tell what he thinks he saw.
Do you think it's true, what he says?
I don't know, Lily. He swore to it. There's a sworn affidavit on file.
And I don't like Judge Watkins either. I think he's against Tom.
It's the jury that counts.
Well, and the truth. All those things Jesse Smith said about Tom's gun, I could have killed him. When the prosecutor said, was it hot when he found it? Did it smell of powder? Did I object to Jesse searching the house? Well, he never did any of those things. He came in, real friendly-like.
Well, the judge ruled out a lot of those questions, Lily. Now, calm down. Tom will get a fair trial.
Well, and I don't understand Mr. Lincoln either. He's supposed to be such a whiz with witnesses. He doesn't cross-examine anyone. Those men, Bill and the other one, who said they saw Tom running away, each one said in a different direction.
David Sovine, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
You, David Sovine?
Yes, sir.
Do you know the prisoner?
I'd say I do. Well enough.
You've played cards with him, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
Dave, tell His Honor when and where you played cards with Thomas Gleason.
Well, we played one night last July in Wooden Snyder's General Store.
Who won?
I guess you could say I did.
And what did you win from Tom?
$13 and his hat and coat and boots and saddle and a handkerchief and knife.
How did Tom get home that night?
Somebody lent him the money to pay up what he lost.
Dave, who was it who lent Tom Grayson the money to get back his things which you had won?
George Lockwood.
Mr. Prosecutor, the hour is getting late. I propose we adjourn for lunch. Are there any objections?
None whatsoever, Your Honor.
Mr. Lincoln, counsel for the defendant, are you hungry enough for the court to adjourn for lunch?
Your Honor, I thought you'd never ask.
Mr. Lincoln, I just want to say before I start in eating, what an honor it is to be in the same courtroom with you and watch you handle a case, Mr. Lincoln.
Oh, thank you, Sheriff.
Mr. Lincoln, how well do you think it's going?
Mrs. Grayson, I hope it's going down easily. I've eaten rabbit stew in practically every tavern in Illinois, so my gullet is pretty much used to anything.
Well, I didn't mean the lunch we're having. I meant the case against Tom. How would you say that's going, Mr. Lincoln?
Well, tolerably.
I think it's terrible they wouldn't let Tom eat with us.
He eats with the prisoners. He's still a suspect, Lily.
Oh, Mrs. Grayson, would you pass along the teapot? I think I shall have another cup.
Oh, happy to, Mr. Lincoln.
Mr. Lincoln.
Oh, it's you, Bill.
Here's that information you wanted.
Oh, good. Thank you, Bill. Oh, Bill Herndon, my associate. You know Mrs. Grayson, of course, and Sheriff Sam Green.
I do.
Yeah, Herndon and I met before.
Did you have this document notarized, Bill?
Oh, sure, sure.
I'll just have a quick look. Quite interesting. Oh, as much as that. Oh, thank you, Bill. I'll see you across the street in the courtroom in half an hour.
Sure thing.
Mr. Lincoln, why did you give up Washington and go back to being a lawyer, sir?
Well, the main reason was the discovery that politics make it necessary to be acquainted with too many of the wrong people.
Speaking as an elected official, I guess one has to accept the fact that if somebody does a favor for you, you got to do a favor for them, huh?
Sheriff, that reminds me of a little story. Once there was a certain king who kept an astrologer. He had to tell him whether it was going to rain when he wanted to go hunting. One day he started off for the forest with his ladies and lords when they met a farmer riding a donkey. "Good morning, farmer," said the king. "Good morning, king," said the farmer. "Where are you folks going?" "Hunting," said the king. "Oh, well, you're going to get very wet," said the farmer. But since the king trusted his astrologer, they kept on going. And the first thing you know, they got caught in such a storm, well, the whole party got drenched to the skin. When the king came home to the palace, he had the astrologer decapitated. And he sent for the farmer to take his place. "Aw, sakes," said the farmer, "it ain't me who knows when it's going to rain, it's my donkey. When it's going to be wet, his ears go back, dry they go forward." "Well, all right," said the king, "make the donkey the court astrologer." Yeah, but it turned out to be the greatest mistake the king ever made in his life.
Well, why was that? Didn't the donkey do his job?
Oh, yes, indeed. But after that time, every donkey in the country assembled in front of the palace and wanted an office.
David Sylvine, who did you say lent Tom Grayson enough to pay you for what you won from him at cards?
George Lockwood paid me $30 and I called it square.
Will you tell the jury whether you were at the county fairgrounds on the 9th of August?
Yes, I was.
And what did you see there?
Well, the usual county fair, you know. It was getting along towards dark, and there was lanterns over where the games were and a lot of people.
Tell about the shooting.
I'd been with George Lockwood, and he said he was going to meet up with Tom Grayson, who was going to pay back what he owed, and I walked away about 20 feet, and I hear George say, "Put that gun away, Tom," or something like that. And then I guess Tom shot him and ran away.
Dave, how far were you from Grayson and Lockwood when the shooting took place?
20 feet or more.
What did Tom shoot with?
A pistol.
What kind of a pistol?
12-millimeter pinfire.
I asked the court to look at this pistol, State Exhibit A, and notice one chamber is empty. One bullet has been fired. Dave, tell the jury whether this looks like the pistol.
Yes, it was one like that. I can't say it was that one, but it was hung from the stock like that and about as long in the barrel.
And what did Tom Grayson do when he had shot George Lockwood? And what did you do?
Well, Tom ran off as fast as his feet could carry him, and I went up to George, who'd fell over. He was dead before I could get there.
Thank you, Mr. Sovine. You may have the witness, Mr. Lincoln.
Picture the tall, lanky frame of Abraham Lincoln, slowly getting to his feet, and even more slowly gazing silently at the witness, David Sovine. Sovine, as the author of this account tells us, seems excited and nervous and visibly pales as his eyes try to escape from lawyer Lincoln's gaze. Is he lying or telling the truth? I know that all of us will find out when I return shortly with Act 3. We are calling this Abraham Lincoln's Murder Trial. And indeed, it was the first time Lincoln had defended a man accused of murder. His method of defense is often quoted as a classic example of how to win a case. How to win a case by careful preparation. Also, it shows how in those days, when Lincoln was a circuit lawyer, what a remarkable talent he had for examining witnesses.
You are Mr. David Sovine?
Yes, sir.
Resident of this community?
Yes, sir.
And you played cards with the accused, Tom Grayson?
Yes, sir.
And won a number of personal effects and money from him?
Yes, Mr. Lincoln.
Which you returned to Grayson upon payment on his behalf by the deceased. A sum of $30.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever had any other financial dealings with the deceased, Mr. Lockwood?
No, sir, not that I can recall.
Well, perhaps a bit later we'll help you recollect. Your Honor, may I beg the court's indulgence while I consult some memoranda I have on the table in front of my client?
Sam?
Yes?
I think Mr. Lincoln knows something about that, David. I think he's found out something.
Huh? Why do you say that?
I've been watching Dave. He's very nervous. He keeps trying to look away when Mr. Lincoln is questioning him. What do you suppose Mr. Lincoln knows?
Why don't we wait and see?
Oh, it's almost so painful for me. I can't breathe.
Lily, if you're right, and Tom has been telling the truth all along, Mr. Lincoln must know Dave Sovine is lying.
Now, Mr. Sovine, you attended a county fair at the fairgrounds on August the 9th. Am I right?
Yes, sir. I went there with George.
Oh, by George, you mean the deceased, George Lockwood.
Yes, sir.
You went there with him?
We went together.
You had things in common to discuss?
I guess you could say that, yes.
You were with Mr. Lockwood before the shooting?
Yes.
Were you not pretty close to him when he was shot?
No, I wasn't.
Are you sure you were as much as 10 feet away?
I was more than 20.
And before he was shot, what had you and George Lockwood been doing?
Well, we've been talking.
Oh, you had?
Yes.
In a friendly way?
Oh, yes, we sure. We never had any fuss.
You parted with George Lockwood as a friend?
We was always friends.
That time as well?
Sure, yes, sir.
Then Tom Grayson appeared, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Well, by the time Tom came up, you'd got, well, say, how far away? Now, be careful now.
Look, I told you twice, more than 20 feet.
Could you have been mistaken about it being Tom then?
No, I wasn't.
Did you know it was Tom before he fired?
Yes, I did.
And how could you be sure?
Well, I turned around and they was talking, moving their hands like it was an argument or something.
What time of night was that?
Oh, long towards 10, I think.
It might have been 11?
No, it wasn't later than about 10.
Not before 9.
No, I said it was nigh on to 10, and it was on to 10.
How far away were you from the Calliope and the amusement booth?
We were at the other end of the fairground. I don't know how far that was.
Come on. Now, Dave, you've been to the county fair often enough to have an idea. One end of the field are the rides and the booths, and the other end of the field is empty except for some trees. That's where you were.
Yes, that's where we were.
So how far would you say you were from the rides and the booths, where everything was lit up with lanterns?
Between half a mile and a mile.
Not over a mile?
No, hardly a mile.
You don't think it might have been a little less than half a mile?
No. If anything, it was more like a mile. I didn't measure it, but it could have been a big three quarters.
Now, you didn't have any candle in your hand, did you, at any time during the evening?
No. What would I be doing with a candle?
Well, did either the deceased, George Lockwood, or the accused, Tom Grayson, have a candle?
No. Why would they?
And tell me again, where were the lights mostly at the fairground?
Well, like always. They're all around the booths and the calliope and up there. Also around the entranceway up there.
And that would be more than 3/4 of a mile from where the murder took place.
Anyways, as much as 3/4, yes.
Now, what did you say before? How far away were you from Lockwood when the murder took place?
20 feet.
You said or more a while ago.
Well, it wasn't no less, perhaps. You don't think I measured it, do you?
There were no lights nearer than 3/4 of a mile.
Lights?
The lanterns around the booths in the main amusement part of the fairground, they were no closer than 3/4 of a mile away from where you were standing.
No, but there are some torches there, too.
I mean, you're not telling me that those lanterns and torches gave any light 3/4 of a mile away and in the woods?
No, of course not.
Well, then, Mr. Sovine, how could you see Tom and know that it was he that fired when the only light was nearly a mile away?
I saw it by moonlight.
Where you were standing, at the far end of the fairground, what sort of trees were there?
Beech.
Beech. Aren't beech leaves pretty thick in August?
In August? Oh, you mean the leaves? Yeah, I guess so.
And yet, light enough from the moon came through those thick beech leaves for you to be sure it was Tom Grayson.
Yes.
And you could see him shoot?
Yes.
And you a full 20 feet away?
Well, about that. Nearly 20, anyhow.
And you pretend to say in this court that by the moonlight you got through the beech trees in August, you could even see it was a pistol that Tom had?
Yes.
And you could see what kind of a pistol it was?
yes, I could.
And just how the barrel was hung to the stock?
Yes.
And you 20 or more feet away?
Well, you see, I got awful good eyes, and I know what I see.
Your Honor, if I may approach the bench for a moment, I would ask the court's permission privately.
Do you wish a recess, Mr. Lincoln?
A brief one, if it's agreeable to the counsel for the prosecution.
Certainly, by all means.
There will be a recess of 10 minutes. Mr. Prosecutor, Mr. Lincoln, will you join me in my chambers?
What's going to happen now?
I'm sure I don't know.
Sheriff, did you see that little green book Mr. Lincoln pulled out of his pocket as he followed Judge Watkins out the door?
Yeah. I wondered what that was.
I've been looking at Tom. He looks so much better.
He should. Miss Lincoln is doing a great deal to discredit Dave. Some of the questions he asked him, I wish I'd thought to ask when Dave made his sworn testimony.
Oh, look, Sheriff. The jury's coming back.
Oh, yeah. So is everybody.
Mr. Lincoln's got that little green book in his hand.
Now, Your Honor, this witness, Dave Sovine, has sworn over and over that he recognized the accused as a person who shot George Lockwood at the back of the fairgrounds on the night of the 9th of last August, and that he, the witness, was standing at the time 20 feet or more away, while the scene of the shooting was nearly a mile distance from the torches and lanterns. Well, so remarkably sharp is this witness's eyes that he even saw what kind of a pistol the prisoner held in his hands and how the barrel was hung to the stock. And he is able to identify this pistol as precisely like and probably the identical weapon. All these details he saw and observed in the brief space of time preceding the fatal shot. Saw and observed them at 10 o'clock at night by means of moonlight shining through the trees. Beech trees in full leaf. Well, this is a pretty hard story. How much light does even a full moon shed in a beech woods like that on the far side of the fairgrounds? Not enough to see our way by, as I can personally attest when I personally stumbled about those woods last night. I have here in my hands an almanac of this year. And if it may please the court, before proceeding with the witness, David Sovine, I would like the jury to look at the page which I hold open in my hand. They will see here that on the night of the 9th of last August, when this extraordinary witness saw the shape of a pistol 20 feet away at 10 o'clock by moonlight, the moon did not rise until 1:30 in the morning.
This is Tommy Grimes again. I'm so fascinated, I simply had to break in. This murder case is on the record as an example of the adroitness with which Abraham Lincoln handled his legal work. Speaking as an actress, I can tell you he even represented actors. You may have heard of Joseph Jefferson, a great actor in Lincoln's day. The town didn't want a theater, so they taxed it out of sight. Lincoln took the case without a fee and had the tax revoked. Jefferson became his friend for life. But now, back to the murder trial. The witness, David Sovine, is still in the witness box. The jury and the judge have examined the almanac, which proves the witness was lying.
Now, may it please the court, I wish at this point to make a motion. This witness in the box has solemnly sworn to a story that has manifestly not one word of truth in it. In order to take away the life of an innocent man, he has invented this atrocious web of lies. Now, why does David Sovine go to all this trouble to perjure himself? Why does he wish to swear away the life of that young man who never did him any harm? Because that witness shot and killed George Lockwood himself.
Your Honor, I move that without witnesses or evidence to prove this accusation, Mr. Lincoln be asked to apologize.
I shall exhibit the evidence in a moment. Mr. Sovine, is it possible the reason you shot and killed Mr. Lockwood was that you owed him a considerable sum? A debt which became easier to discharge by a bullet than by hard labor?
Yes. I did have some money dealings with George, but I didn't. No, I didn't shoot him.
Mr. Sovine, you told us in lieu of a pair of boots, a saddle, a hat, a coat, and $13 owed, you accepted a mere $30 as full payment from George Lockwood. Why were you so generous? Those items are worth an aggregate of a great deal more.
Well, I am generous. That's my nature.
It wouldn't be perhaps because... Well, let me just consult this notarized document I have in my hand. It wouldn't be because you owed George Lockwood the sum of $1,174.
No. No.
If the prosecuting attorney would be so good as to examine this document, which we may or may not enter as a formal exhibit, I move, Your Honor, that David Sylvine be arrested at once on suspicion of murder. I submit to the court that David Sylvine took advantage of a moonless night and killed the man to whom he owed $1,174. Now, may it please the court, I move, Your Honor, that in the case of the state of Illinois against Thomas Grayson, the jury be instructed to render a verdict of not guilty.
This man, this force for good, this Abraham Lincoln, knew as much of the law as was written in books. He knew right and justice and how they applied to everyday life. As his law partner, William Herndon, tells us, Lincoln's face lighted up, defending liberty and proclaiming truth. Then it was that those homely features sprang into beauty as if he were just fresh from the hands of his creator. I shall return shortly. The fact that some of those things Lincoln said are true today makes me think and makes me very sad. Listen to this. He said, "There is a growing disregard for law that pervades our country. It's an ill omen. Accounts of outrages committed are the everyday news of the time. How shall we fortify against it? Let reverence for the law be breathed by every American mother to the babe on her lap. Let it be taught in schools and colleges, preached from the pulpit, and enforced in courts of justice. Reverence for the law. Dear Abraham Lincoln, how I wish you were alive today and could show us how." Our cast included Lloyd Batista, Patricia Elliott, Robert Dryden, and Gordon Gould. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time.